With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
Julia J. Ruckledge, PhD, is a professor of psychology and clinical psychologist in the School of Psychology, Speech and Hearing at the University of Canterbury, director of Te Puna Toi Ora, the Mental Health and Nutrition Research Lab, theme leader in the Child Wellbeing Institute, and co-author of The Better Brain, jointly published by Penguin, Random House, and HarperCollins in 2021. Originally from Toronto, Canada, she completed her PhD at the University of Calgary in clinical psychology, and in 2000 she immigrated to New Zealand. Her interests in nutrition and mental illness grew out of research showing poor outcomes for individuals with significant psychiatric illness, despite receiving standard conventional treatments. Her 2014, going back a few years there, TEDx talk has been viewed over 5 million times. Pretty well the population of the country,
if those
are individual views. Professor Ruckledge, welcome to our radio station. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Okay, and we're here to discuss school lunches. Should the government fund them? And what about the quality? And this has become an issue again, comes up quite regularly, actually, but on the back of David Seymour's comments about funding them, the wastage, and how we measure their, I guess, effect. So, Julia, lunches at school.
Yeah.
Binary question, good or bad?
It's not a binary question at all. So I think it's fantastic that we're talking about food and its relationship with children, because of something that's, of course, near and dear to my heart is the role that our food environment is playing in the mental health statistics of our young people. And there's sufficient data internationally to show that the food environment, particularly ultra-processed food, these are the packaged foods, the things that you could never make it in a kitchen. These are the things with all the extra ingredients to have a better shelf life, to make it taste good because they've taken out the fat, that type of thing, the emulsifiers, preservatives, colors, flavors, etc. That their role is definitely significantly contributing to poor mental health outcomes.
Right.
The problem is that this conversation has been just been talking about food. So when people, so if you throw everything together as food, you're not actually talking about what kind of food is going into those school lunches.
Yep.
So if the food that is being given to these kids is ultra-processed foods, then that is concerning relative to if that the food that they're receiving is nourishing, grown locally, consists of foods that are high in vitamins and minerals that we know are essential for brain health, then we're talking about something completely different. I certainly don't think that the government should be funding ultra-processed crap for our kids.
Now, I think we can all agree on that.
But that doesn't mean that's not happening.
No, and why would it happen? Because I'm just a dumb guy on the street. Even I know that. So why would you contract service delivery of crap food for kids?
Well, I actually don't think that people do know that. I think, and that's something
I mean,
let's take the types of foods. 69% of food that's sold in a supermarket is ultra processed. That's data from a few years ago. It certainly hasn't gotten any better. The food star ratings that are on foods, like your ultra processed, all cereals that are sold in supermarkets are ultra processed. There is no good nutrients in there. And yet we see that as probably as a healthy thing because
they
might
advertise
have a 4.5 star.
And support the All Blacks.
Exactly. That's right. Yes. So it might be 4.5 star ratings for some of them. There are a couple of exceptions where they wouldn't be classified as ultra processed. They might simply have wheat, but most of them have got added ingredients. Just turn it around and have a look at it. The problem is that we have these ultra processed food stickers or that are, you know, sorry, they, we have these star rating stickers that are on the front of a package. And it's about what's not in the food. Low in salt, low in sugar, low in calories, low in fat, and potentially fortified with one nutrient could get you a 5-star rating, depending on the category. So it's not, it's more about what's not in the food than what is in the food. So there, that doesn't mean that it's rich in nutrients. It doesn't mean that, it doesn't say anything about whether or not there's added ingredients in there. It also doesn't tell you anything about whether or not there's glyphosate in there. So there's, it's actually a metric that's really good for the food industry, but not necessarily good for your health.
That's a scam, really. I mean, I know 4 or 5 years ago, I was shown that Diet Coke in the UK under that system was basically a health food.
Well, that's right. And things like coconut milk, which is a really nourishing food, is 1.5-star rating. So it helps you make decisions between one ultra-processed food and another ultra-processed food, which one might be slightly better. But we've been kind of sort of brought down this, this road by the food industry to make some fundamental food choices about what to feed our children. And it ends up that kids are eating a lot of this stuff. There was research that was done locally here in New Zealand that showed that about 50% of the calories that 5-year-olds are eating are ultra processed. And it even is sort of a similar number when it went to 1-year-olds. So the notion that you said that we all know this, I don't think is probably correct. And I really don't necessarily think that the government knows this. And if they do know it, they're not giving it any attention. And it's not because I haven't brought it to their attention.
Yeah, we've talked about this too. The food lobby, let's call it that, seems to have so much power of persuasion. And otherwise, intelligent people just cave in.
Well, yes.
And why?
Why? I don't know if I can completely answer your question, but it's not dissimilar to tobacco. So if you start thinking about the food industry as the tobacco industry, then you start to understand that they're going to do everything that they can to try to put the smoke screen so that we don't actually know what it is that we're eating. So,
but if you're a Minister of Health, the fundamental thing you should know,
yes,
there's a difference between ultra-processed UPF, mm-hmm, ultra-processed food, and what your mama used to make you,
but
depending
that,
on your age.
I haven't heard that raised at all in any of these conversations. And, in all fairness, I haven't heard every single conversation that's happened since the school lunch thing has come up. But we only hear about the school lunches and the importance that kids get some food. Most of the time, people are talking about calories. They're not necessarily talking about that food having to be nourishing. Now, I understand that there are some schools that where they get the kids to participate in the making of the lunches, the parents are involved, they might even grow some of the food at the school. Now, that is like the absolute beauty of what a school lunch should be about, is that everyone is contributing, participating in the growing of the food and then the making of the food and then eating of the food. But if you're outsourcing it to another company, then you can end up with I don't know what in terms of the content of that food. So it's going to vary from one school to another. And I think there are, of course, some schools that are doing a fantastic job with this and are making sure that it's the nourishing food. But I believe that that's not the case across New Zealand. So
okay, if you were to hammer out a policy that works now as part of every school, okay, there'll be some that probably can't get to this, but probably not too many in the end, if funding's not an issue, that has to operate gardens and a proper kitchen and involve people who know how to prepare food and bring parents in and then make sure that the kids eat the stuff. So that's got to be a standard fit in every school, right? Pretty well.
I think that would be a great, that would certainly be going in the right direction. I think we've lost our way. We've kind of basically outsourced food to other people, and we've kind of accepted that packaged foods and, ready-made meals are going to get takeaways as sort of a go-to in people's diets these days. And we've forgotten that our ancestors didn't eat that way. So I think it is about going back to some of those basics and some lost education. We've lost some, access to land that might be really good for growing, healthy food. We are perhaps not putting the nutrients back into the soil so that the food, even if it's technically good food, it might not be as nourishing as it used to be. So we've lost a lot of this language and this knowledge. And so it is, I think, having that as part of the education and also reminding, or not even, I don't know if it's reminding, but educating people that when you eat, you're predominantly feeding your brain. So the brain punches above its weight. It's 2% body weight, but it consumes between 20 to 40% of the nutrients that you eat. So when you eat, you're predominantly feeding your brain. I don't think a lot of people know that. I think the kids will be told, eat the, you know, eat your greens because it might help you grow.
Yeah.
Might be good for your bones, your muscles, or your heart. But I don't know if that conversation is really on mental health or on the brain health. And that's if we, you know, we collectively look at the data now on the association between what we eat and our mental health, gosh, you'd think the government would really jump on this as being something that's really essential and fundamental to addressing the mental health crisis.
They're already spending billions on this.
On what?
On mental health, apparently.
No, but they're, well, I don't know what they're spending it on, but they certainly have, nutrition isn't even mentioned in documents when it comes to talking about the health of, you know, youth in New Zealand. And it's just, I mean, that to me is absolutely, you know, that.
How could you sign off the money without including that? It's so, again, it's so obvious.
I mean, it might be obvious to you, but I still honestly don't think it's obvious. Even people who work in mental health don't necessarily know that nutrition is relevant.
Well, they need to go
health.
Back to school, man. I mean, I know I'm sounding a bit intolerant, but sometimes I think common sense lacks
if you remember that we've had a paradigm for the last 40 to 50 years, which has really been focused on the chemical imbalance of neurotransmitters in your brain. So there's been this rhetoric, which is around, you know, that you don't have enough serotonin, and so therefore you need an SSRI, or you don't have enough dopamine, so you need a stimulant. So we've had this, the conversation in the public healthcare system has really revolved around that. So if you've grown up getting that type of education, which in all fairness I've received, then as a clinical psychologist, nutrition wasn't talked about in my training.
Wow.
And it certainly isn't talked about in the training for your psychiatrists. So if the people who are dealing with the people with the mental health problems aren't aware of the very strong connection between what you eat and your mental health, then you end up with this kind of situation where it's not going to be talked about in the reports because that knowledge isn't there yet. I think it's changing, but I think you saying that it's just common sense is perhaps overlooking the very strong role or the very powerful role that the pharmaceutical industry has played in our mental health story. So
we've seen examples of that recently as well. So now after hearing you this far, I'm thinking it's not just kids whose parents don't provide food reliably that have got a problem here. They do have a problem, but kids are probably going to school with crap in their lunchbox anyway, right?
Yes. There's been research that's been done on kids' lunchboxes. Not myself specifically, but I know of others. And it is a bit alarming about some of the things that are going in there. But at the same time, we've got this in food environment where things that are, they look cheaper on the outset. You know, they, or at least if you look at, you know, if you were to look at ultra processed foods in comparison to your fruits and vegetables, the ultra processed foods, they look cheaper. But you know, as Michael Pollan has so eloquently stated long time ago, you know, there is no cheap food. Cheap food is an illusion. If you don't pay for it at the supermarket, you're going to pay for it later in your health. Mm. So that is, and we do pay for it as taxpayers in terms of the long term chronic outcomes of eating these foods over time. The evidence is just so strong now. There was a report that came out of the British Medical Journal, or a review, not what they call umbrella review, which is like a review of reviews, that showed the insidious nature of these ultra-processed products in impacting our health. Diabetes, cardiovascular, your obesity epidemic, et cetera. But what was also in there was mental health. And that's the thing that is newer to the scene. We really, like, I've been in this area for 15 years or longer looking at this connection. So I'm pretty familiar with it. Only recently have I seen that more people are talking about this connection. When I first started doing this work of nutrition and mental health, people thought I was completely nuts. How can nutrition be relevant to your brain?
Part of your damn body, right?
Well, I know, but there's this disconnect between the brain and the body, right? And that's gone on for a while. Yeah. So you might think that it's obvious, but believe me, people who work in this field don't necessarily see it as obvious.
Okay, maybe not obvious to that level, but just to ask questions. Like I say, if you're the health minister,
yeah.
Wouldn't you be saying to your officials, I want to see if there's anything in nutrition and brain? Can you tell me? Give me the evidence.
I know, but they need to know to ask that question.
Oh, man.
How do they get
the job?
I don't know, but I've written to enough ministers of health over the last years. Right? Yeah, okay. That doesn't matter. I remember writing to, who was the one when John Key was at, was around? Was a doctor too. Who was that? Yeah. Years and years ago, Coleman.
Maybe the name will come to.
I remember writing to him and just saying, here, let me tell you about all this research that I'm doing on vitamins and minerals and mental health, and please pay attention. I have had elevator conversations with so many ministers over the years and have told them about this connection and they should pay attention, and yet nothing happens. So I'm surprised at your age that you actually think that this is going, you know, that reason should prevail when it comes to politicians.
Well, I had three kids go to school, and we sent them, maybe because we were conscious of that back in the day, we're going back a few decades now, for the last one I went through, you know, we made sure every lunch was just that, because it was kind of what the sensible thing to do. That's really why I'm keep defaulting to common sense. Now,
I know.
So my theory of, I know what you're going to say here, because it was my idea last week that maybe we could get the airline caterers to mass produce meals, because they're not too bad in the plane, but that's not acceptable. Does that carry, because everyone's twisted up about how much it costs, right? And how much is wasted. And I guess getting the best deal on the contract is going to head those arguments off at the pass. There must be some way, and having gardens and that infrastructure is one thing, but that's complicated. Is there any way in the meantime that we can package up and reliably get proper, nutritious, whole food to kids at school every day?
Right. I mean, I'm not a food producer in that sense or work in that industry, but I can imagine that that's possible. Because of the work I do, I end up going to conferences on well-being, positive psychology, positive medicine, etc. And the catering is always absolutely superb.
Yep.
They know how to feed
for
people.
You.
So it is, I mean, it is certainly possible that there are some basic principles of making sure that it's minimally processed and you don't include a bunch of things that have got these added ingredients that you can't find in a kitchen. So if you could just use that as the basics of what you serve children, then that would be really good place to start. But I think I'm sure you've already talked about on your show already, is that let's not miss the elephant in the room, which is that why is it that kids need to be given a lunch in the first place? And that are we, you know, it's obscure, you know, it's hiding the bigger problem, which is poverty and food insecurity in New Zealand. And how did that happen?
That's a longer fix, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I know.
That's a way longer fix.
But we should still not ignore that, because in the big picture is that we produce enough food to feed 20 million people. So why is it in a country that is so abundant in fresh food, and grass-fed meat, in amazing produce of fruits and vegetables, why we should have food insecurity? And we have food insecurity in some of the places where those foods are produced, like Hawke's Bay. So how did that happen, that we are not looking after our own and we are, you know, favoring export over making sure that everyone in our country, in this country, gets adequate food at a reasonable price.
Follow the money, right?
Yeah, I know. Follow the money. But so that's where I think what I do, I'm heartened by, are some of the stories of the communities getting together and recognizing their role and what they should be doing in terms of addressing these problems. And that's when you hear about the growing of the food, the participation of the kids and the families and the parents in solving this problem, rather than just sort of saying the government needs to sort this out. Yes, of course, we taxpayers can participate in that. But at the same time, you know, communities can play such an important role in making sure that we all embrace how important it is that we all receive a nourishing meal every day, or at least, possibly three, better three, but that everyone gets that. And that it's like
it's an investment. Right.
It's totally an investment, investment in the future for these kids. And we know the impact of not eating these foods is going to have on their mental health. So I guess I'd hope that the minister would acknowledge the positive outcomes of the current school lunches in improving things that have got to do with mental health. And there is data out there that does show those benefits. I know that he's been questioning the issue around attendance, but there's certainly data that's showing that all these indicators about well-being have been going up. And when you have a population improving their well-being, then we know that that's going to have a positive impact in terms of reducing the likelihood of them going on and develop a mental health problem. So it is currently having a positive impact, but perhaps not in the way that the minister was hoping to see.
Right. Professor Julia Ruckledge, thanks for coming on and sharing your thoughts on that. This point is most informative, very interesting.
My pleasure.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.